Satvam jighamsa se kasmat.
Jinam akrita kildisham.
Ahanishyat katam yosham.
Dharmagya iti yomataha.
The earth is appealing to King Prithu for protection on the grounds of being a woman. According to Vedic culture, women should be protected. Women, children, cows, old people, old men, and brahmanas, they are all to be protected. Did you get them all? Women, children, old men, cows. Now, to be protected means that you have to accept protection. In the modern age, there is the idea of women's liberation. Not only women's liberation, the idea that everyone is equal. Everyone has equal rights. In Vedic culture, everybody does not have equal rights. Shudras do not have the same rights as Brahmanas. Brahmanas, they're allowed to do anything. There's no law for them. But if someone of less developed consciousness has such a facility, they will misuse it. There are different laws for different people according to their development of consciousness. It's not the same law for everyone. Now, in the modern age, they want to have uniform, universal laws and rights for everybody. But this has simply resulted in chaos throughout the world. Because if everybody has equal rights, one of the things is that nobody is protected. If any class is to be protected, then there must be a class of protectors and a class of protected. And there must be there will be social dealings between them as protectors and protected, not as equals. The protectors of human society in Vedic culture are the Kshatriyas, the kings. So they have the right to punish a criminal. Not everybody has this right. Women are to be protected by men. They also have to be submissive, that is the culture. So that they're protected and at the same time submissive. But if we say that everyone should be equal in all respects, then where is the protection? So why is it said that women should be protected? Because if they're not protected, they'll be exploited. And that's going on in the present day. That the idea is that everyone is equal in all respects, women should be equal to men in all ways. Therefore the culture of protection has gone. Men will not want to protect women unless they reciprocate by submissiveness and service. And if they find that then women are independent, then they will exploit them. This is going on in the modern age. And therefore these five groups of people who require protection are in the modern age most exploited and most unhappy. You can see how the Vedic social concept is so perfect. Just by seeing how much, when it's not followed, how much suffering, how much difficulty is there. In the modern age, women, children, old men, cows and brahmanas are not protected. Therefore, they are most vulnerable and most exploited and most unhappy. Women means that they have no protection, means that they have no fixed position in family life. So many times it happens that a woman looks after the family and home and husband for so many years. Then after some years, the husband kicks out. Thinks, now you're too old and ugly, I'll find a younger, more beautiful girl. Therefore, the women, knowing that they have any fixed, safe position, they don't want to give themselves fully as they used to. So family life is full of doubt, suspicion. Because the wife is always thinking the husband may any time run off with some other woman and vice versa. Or that it may be going on even now without my knowledge. Faithfulness in family life is no longer considered a virtue. And the main sufferers are the women who, by their psychophysical nature, require steady, protective position. Similarly, children are suffering. Children also require great protection, physically, culturally, in so many ways. But modern society is set up so that both husband and wife are working. The women don't have time to properly look after the children. They will therefore grow up without proper protection. Now, of course, the television, of course, Here in Russia it's not so bad, but in the Western countries the television is a tremendous corruptor of the minds of young children. From a young age, the children are exploited by the television, which trains them how to be nasty demons and makes so many desires in their hearts through advertising that they should buy this and buy that. And this way the tender innocence of children, which could be guided towards God consciousness, is spoiled. Similarly, old people are not protected. They're not respected. They're simply considered a burden. And in many cases, usually in Western countries, they're simply put in some home for old people, locked away so that we won't have to bother looking after them. And they spend the last years of their life very unhappy and lonely. Now in the Western countries, gradually in the last few years, there is increasing propaganda for euthanasia. Mm-hmm. Euthanasia means killing people in the name of helping them. The idea is that if someone is suffering with some disease, out of kindness we should inject them with some poison which will kill them. And it's gradually becoming socially acceptable. There have been several cases recently of doctors openly saying that, yes, you killed this patient. People saying, yes, I killed my child. You're suffering with so much disease, I killed. Just to save from pain. So it's becoming socially acceptable. And then they will see there are so many old people. They can't work, they can't do anything to help society, and they can't enjoy life and various diseases. So out of kindness we should just have an injection and they'll be dead. And they won't have to suffer anymore. This was predicted by George Orwell. I think maybe you studied his books in Russia? No?
Whom?
George Orwell.
Orwell.
He's a famous English author. He's not a devotee of Krishna, but he was empowered by Krishna to have some vision into the future of how nasty human society will be.
In many ways,
he said. Just like, for instance, how people would use language, they would use euphemisms to cover up all kinds of nasty things. Just like nowadays we have abortion is called pregnancy termination. What's the point I was going to make it? He was predicting that in future society that people, when they reach the age of 60, by law they would have to be killed. So it's not impossible. These things are coming. People think the purpose of life is to enjoy. When you're old, you can't enjoy sense gratification. And what's worse, you're a burden on the young people who want to enjoy sense gratification. So it's actually better for society. You should very humanely kill the old people. At present, old people are considered a burden. Such heartless society. People bring up their children, sacrificing themselves in so many ways. And when they get old, the children just put them in some home. They don't want to look after them. Mm-hmm. So cows, it hardly goes without saying how much cows are suffering from lack of protection. Recently at Bhaktivedanta Mana, our center in London, I was there. My father, Bodhi's father, was visiting. So we were walking in the grounds and there were cows there. So naturally, being in India, it's a very common thing that people walk up to cows and stroke them and pet them like this. So I did that with the cow. I walked up, you have to, under here, they like if you scratch here. My father was very surprised. No longer economically viable to come and look after them. And brahmanas are not protected. The brahmana class in India, of course, many of them were simply exploiting their position. But until recently, there were, from the Brahmana class, still many saintly, cultured, very high class, learned, renounced, actual Brahmanas, being born in Brahmin families. But then democracy came, communism, Marxist philosophy spread in India. And people thought, who are these Brahmanas? Why should they be maintained? They're simply worshipping God. It's useless. It doesn't do any good to human society. So no protection. Now so many temples in India are neglected because there's no support for Brahmanas. They don't have to get jobs. All over the world we see that the Krishna conscious movement is spreading. The government should support and protect this movement. But the situation is so obnoxious that we think a government is good if they don't harass us. They should not simply not harass, they should help this movement. But the majority of governments treat the Krishna conscious movement with suspicion, at least. The governments have no program to reform the citizens. They spend so much money on police departments, prisons, because the character of the people is so poor. The Krishna conscious movement is doing the work that the government should sponsor of improving the moral character of the citizens. Governments in general, they don't want their they don't want their citizens to be of good character. The government men themselves don't have good character. Therefore they don't put any value on good character. The government men think that the citizens should be encouraged in meat eating, gambling, illicit sex and intoxication. Their whole economic system rests on this. Unless there is massive animal slaughter, intoxication, gambling, then how will their economic system go on? Unless there are advertisements with women half naked promoting everything and all the different consumer products, then how will their economic system go on? They have created a society in which there's no thinking, there's no elevated thinking. Philosophical thinking about the purpose of life is practically taboo in modern society. All the good brains are channeled into science. And science means how to create more machines for sense gratification. Sense gratification on one side and destruction on the other. And if anyone tries to stop our sense gratification, we have more bombs and tanks and guns to destroy them. So many scientists are engaged in defense research. That's another euphemism, defense. Every war is started in the name of defense. Everyone says we are simply defending. So all in all, it's a very difficult situation. There's no protection, there's simply exploitation. It's even many animals, then in this sense, they're more advanced than humans. Even the bees and the ants, which are very low-grade creatures, not very high intelligence, they cooperate in their societies. Even they have gradations, queens, soldiers, workers. Modern society, they talk about everyone being equal, but then what happens is that might makes right. If you say that everyone is equal, then what happens is who becomes most powerful, they dominate and exploit the others. So Vedic society means to be ruled by Shastra, not by Shastra. To be ruled by Vedic injunction that is given by God, not simply by weapons. Weapons are also required to curb the rascals. But the kings who are wielding those weapons, they act under the guidance of Vedic injunction. They work under the guidance of saintly people, Brahmanas. Brahmana means his whole life is dedicated towards guiding human society for its uplift. So such a concept of society is completely removed from modern society. There are different theories of social organization extended modern society. Communism, fascism. Actually, there's no difference between communism and fascism. Practically all these theories have all thrown out, and now it's just rampant consumer capitalistic society. But all these different ideas, they don't work. Neither is there peace in human society, nor is there spiritual uplift, which is the whole purpose of human life. The Vedic social concept is Dharanashram. It's completely different to in concept and structure. In every way, it's completely different to anything that is extant or even thought of in human society. Srila Prabhupada spoke about a revolution of Krishna consciousness all over the world. A revolution of consciousness to come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. But when we speak about a revolution, that means many, many people taking to Krishna consciousness. And obviously the social system will have to change also, because the present social system is just meant for foolish people with no idea of the goal of life. That's why when devotees of Krishna, they have to, the grihasthas, they have to get, if they have to generate money by working within the society, it's very difficult for them, because the consciousness that goes with the modern lifestyle is opposed to Krishna consciousness. It's antithetical. Therefore, Prabhupada stressed that it's better for grihasthas to live on the land, produce their own food, and be Krishna conscious so that we don't have to live within the demoniac society, which drags even those of high aspirations down. So revolution of Krishna consciousness all over the world means bringing in Varnashram. It's a great challenge. If our devotees want to philosophically accept Krishna consciousness, but not culturally accept its implications, then neither will they be able to be properly Krishna conscious, nor will they be able to spread Krishna conscious in the world properly. Krishna conscious means more than changing our dress. It even means more than accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or rather, full acceptance of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead means to accept the teachings that he imparts. Sarvam etadritam manye yanmam vadasi keshava. Arjuna told Krishna, my dear Krishna, I accept everything that you have told me. So Krishna, of course, the basic teachings, the essential teachings, are to surrender to him. But Krishna has given a whole social system also, a whole way of life. There are certain attitudes which go with that way of life. So if we want to maintain our attitudes towards life, thinking, well, we're Russian or we're American, that won't work in Krishna consciousness. We have to accept the attitudes inculcated within the Varnashram system. Of course, as long as we're living in modern society, we have to interact with it, at least to some extent, on its own terms. But our real aim is to establish a different society. We should be convinced that this modern society is simply barbaric. People, their normal diet is blood. Just on that alone, we can, what to speak of so many other things, we can understand that society is barbaric. It's not human society. So, talking about changing human society means we have to begin with ourselves. There are many, many things to be said about this. Maybe you haven't even thought about these things so much. I don't know. Because our movement is quite new here. In Russia, at least, open preaching is quite new. And the preaching field is enlivening. We have a good response from the public. Many people are joining as devotees. But in other countries where our movement's been established for a long time, there are a lot of thoughts about this. That we preach very widely, we make devotees. But once people become devotees, what do we do with them after that? Because very few people become pure devotees very quickly. So how are we going to guide them to live in this world and gradually develop their Krishna consciousness? How do we guide grihasthas to live in this world, and we have to interact with this world and at the same time be Krishna conscious? How do we set up communities in which people can come and live and cultivate Krishna consciousness? How do we create that atmosphere in our society in which people will want to go on practicing Krishna consciousness throughout their lives? So these are great questions facing us. It's relatively easy to make devotees. Not that it's easy, but it's relatively easy. But to maintain devotees in Krishna consciousness throughout their lives, that is a great challenge. That requires great maturity on the part of the devotee to inspire courage and direct others, so that even while living in this world with material responsibilities, they remain ever enlivened in Krishna consciousness. Everything is possible by the grace of Krishna. There's no doubt about that. By Krishna's mercy, the impossible becomes possible. Just like from the material conception, it's impossible that there should be devotees of Krishna all over the world. No one imagined such a thing 40 years ago. No one except Prabhupada. But at that time, from the external point of view, he was an insignificant beggar, practically. Those that knew him respected him, but he didn't. No one could imagine what he would do, and he did it. Because he had faith in Krishna. And Krishna can do wonderful things. So Prabhupada said, I've given you the framework for Krishna consciousness. Now you have to fill it in. He gave us the guidelines. Now we have to institute this throughout human society. So go on with Krishna consciousness. Chant, study Prabhupada's books, serve, and live in the society of devotees. And understand that anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness is a very special person. and we should try to deal with them in such a way that they become encouraged more and more in Krishna consciousness, because it's very easy to become discouraged. And we have seen that many people have taken up Krishna consciousness, but not being able to attain the highest standard very quickly, become discouraged. Srila Prabhupada spoke about very big things, that a whole nation shall become Krishna conscious. At our present stage, if we can at least make whole temples Krishna conscious, that would be good stuff. If there is a small seed, if the seed is well maintained and nurtured, then a great tree can grow. If you want a tree, you just can't bring some pieces of wood and stick them all together and think you'll get a tree. You have to start with a small seed, and that has to be gradually nurtured. So in the same way, if we're talking about Krishna consciousness spreading very widely throughout the world, we have to nurture what we already have. And from that, everything else can develop. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any question?
She wanted to... she wanted you to give a name to her boy.
All right, that will do afterwards. Not just
that.
Now we have some questions about that.
Sometimes a devotee who joins the temple doesn't consider himself fit to be a brahmachari, but on the other hand, he cannot take the burden of family life. Is there some intermediate position between brahmachari and grihastha ashram, or he must stick to one of the ashrams?
Bachelor. No, in the Vedic system, there's brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasa. To be a brahmachari is not very easy. Real brahmachari. To be a grihastha, real grihastha, is also not easy. But if one is not up to the standard of being a brahmachari, then he should be a grihastha. There's so many young girls also coming to this movement, and they also need husbands. So that's also one kind of burden. Sometimes you think, well, it's too much of a burden, I don't want to take the responsibility. But that is required. In every grown man should take responsibility. Either he should take the responsibility to practice spiritual life at a very high standard, or at least he should take the responsibility of a family and guide them in Krishna consciousness. Due to this attitude, I don't want to take the burden, I don't want to take the responsibility. That's why there's so many problems in family life. People think, well, I'd like to enjoy sense gratification, but I don't want to take the responsibility of looking after a family. So begrudgingly they get married because they think, well, I want to enjoy sense gratification. But the inevitable burden comes of having to maintain the family. Then sometime, a few years later, he makes a calculation that I'm only getting this much sense gratification, I've got this much problem. This much sense gratification, I can get that even without this problem. I can just leave the family and get my sense gratification without it. Then abandon the family. So no, there is no intermediate position. Either be a brahmachari or be a grihastha. If you're a brahmachari, be a proper brahmachari. If you're a grihastha, be a proper grihastha.
Maybe sometimes this euthanasia can also be...
This what?
Euthanasia, I think. When killing the person who is...
Euthanasia.
Euthanasia. maybe it also can be beneficial, for example, like killing a criminal or killing a snake or a scorpion.
No, that's different. Killing a criminal... Not every criminal, but there is someone who's murdered. That is beneficial for the criminal. That's different to euthanasia. The point is that everything should be done according to Shastra, according to the laws of God. Because people don't know what the laws of God are, and they don't have any inclination to follow them, they make up their own standards of morality. That's why there's different standards of morality in different countries of the world, because people don't follow the standard, which is the standard given by God. And gradually, in the name of morality, they promote so many degraded things. It's like they say abortion should be allowed because a woman should have the right to do what she wants with her own body, not considering that by the laws of nature, they're bearing another body within their body. Any other question?
Sometimes a devotee wants to lead a strict life, to live in the temple, but what devotees are very much attracted towards him and writing him letters and asking to visit him, what should he do?
Ramana is asking about himself. What if someone? Who is that someone? Just theoretically.
Also.
Well, you have to decide what you want. You want Krishna or what do you want? If the relatives are attracted to you because they're in Maya, they want you to come, and all of a sudden they found out they don't have anyone to wash their clothes or cook for them. So they love you so much. Mm-hmm. There's no value in that. If you can make the family Krishna conscious, that's very good. But if you're just going to be a sock washing machine, then what's the value? Better serve Krishna. At the time of death, you have to think of Krishna.
It is said in these verses that when Mother Earth was afraid of King Prithu, he took the form of a cow and tried to escape. Was it the Earth herself or the goddess of Earth?
It's the deity of the Earth planet, who is non-different from the Earth planet. Everything is a person. Everything is personal. Just like you see rivers, they're all people. There is a particular person who is the person of that river. Ganga cha, Yamuna cha, Saraswati, Godavari, all these, they're goddesses. These are the names of rivers, and they're also goddesses. Even today in many cultures, we recognize that there are so many spirits. In India they're called Gramya Devatas, it means village gods. There's so many gods, the gods of the forest, and the gods of the river, the gods of the fields. It's not big demigods.
Well, chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if you cannot always think of me, you may work for me, and so on. What does it mean to simply work for Krishna, and for what category of people it was said?
It's said for the category of people that can't. It's very clear in Bhagavad Gita, those who can't think of him should follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. They're different. If you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, do this. What does it mean to work for Krishna? That Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Yad karoshi, yad ashnasi, yad shahoshi, idasiya, yad tapasyasi kantaya, tat karusha manapuram. Everything should be done for Krishna. Whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever austerities we perform, whatever charity, everything should be done for Krishna-centered life. This is explained in one book. I don't think you have that in Russian yet. This was written by Prabhupada before he came to the West. In that book, a message of Godhead, Prabhupada describes in some detail, living at home and offering all results of our work to Krishna. Do you have that in Russian yet?
Mm-hmm.
Which books do you have in Russian now? After which canto, Bhagavatam?
Fourth canto.
It's coming quite slowly. Eh?
Yeah, there's some problems with editing.
So what is the difference between the doing the work for Krishna and following the regulative principles of bhakti?
In pure devotional service, the devotee simply acts under the direction of the spiritual master, wholly and solely for the pleasure of Krishna. Mm-hmm. He has no personal agenda. Whereas Karma Yoga, of course, the term Karma Yoga may be used in different senses. Because generally it's understood that someone is performing karma, he's performing activities in this world with some personal desire. But when those activities are performed, not wholly and solely for one's personal desire, but as an offering to Krishna, that is called Karma Yoga. So the beginning of Karma Yoga is with personal desires, to bring everything to Krishna and offer it to Krishna. But that gradually develops until the karma yogi, he develops to the stage of working without any personal desire, simply working for the pleasure of Krishna. So bhakti yoga, that can also be called karma yoga, because the devotee is active in the service of Krishna. Mat karma krind, mat paramo, Krishna says in Gita. You work for me. So that working for me, that is bhakti yoga. But generally karma yoga is understood to mean working with some personal desire, but offering the results to Krishna and gradually becoming pure conscious. Now, we may ask them, well, what about an initiated devotee who is a householder, who's living in this world and working in this world, and he's also making some concession for sense gratification, like being married.
Yeah.
So is that bhakti yoga or karma?
Mm-hmm.
Is he no better than a fruitive worker who simply offers what he does to Krishna?
Yeah.
No, if his goal of life is clearly to become a pure devotee of Krishna, and his family life, although there is some concession for sense gratification, there is clearly centered on Krishna and Krishna consciousness, then he's a bhakti yogi on family life. However, if the balance tips the other way,
yes,
Krishna consciousness becomes only not the main part, not the main focus of his family life, then he's not properly situated on the path of bhakti.
Srila Prabhupada says that Jnana Yoga is higher than Karma Yoga and Raja Yoga is higher than Jnana Yoga, like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like in this sense that Karma Yoga is more conducive to bhakti than other.
Well, generally the Vedic path is a gradual one of Karma Yoga. Generally in the Vedic path, Karma Yoga means performing sacrifices with personal desires. Performing sacrifices, the yagyapati, yagya bhuk, the lord of the sacrifice, to enjoy the sacrifices of Vishnu. But simply by this method of karma yoga, one